Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. In October of 1985, I delivered a lesson on this program which I called The Divine Right of Kings. In that lesson, I pointed out that God requires the same moral behavior of kings, presidents, governors, and other public servants that He requires of the rest of us. God has not ordained one moral code for the rich, the powerful, and the influential, and another for ordinary people like you and me. On the occasion of which I speak, I emphasize that even David, the man after God's own heart, was held accountable for his grievous sin with Bathsheba. If God would not allow this king to sin with impunity, why do public servants in modern times think that they will be excused for their evil conduct? Today's lesson is designed as a sequel to that previous lesson. I am designating today's lesson, Ethics of Public Servants. I am concerned, and I believe most of you share that concern, about this topic because of what I read regularly in various newspapers and magazines and what I see on television. Judges, military officers, national and state legislators, and even presidents are guilty of cheating, lying, mishandling public funds, and betraying the public trust in many other ways. Do these public servants think we are going to allow them to get by with such behavior? Unfortunately, the answer in many cases is yes. They have seen many other politicians commit heinous deeds and be able to retain their positions. It is time that we be informed about this issue and that we have the courage to stop it. Please listen as I read some clippings from newspapers and magazines. From the Commercial Appeal, July the 19th, 1983, I would like to read a few sentences. A General Sessions judge has been censured by the Tennessee Supreme Court's Board of Professional Responsibility after pleading guilty of mishandling funds from accident claims, page 1A. My friends, if the men and women who sit on judicial benches are not honest, and many of them are not, it has a devastating effect on both the young and the old. We complain about the dishonesty of many of our American citizens. I'm not trying to excuse that behavior, but when our public servants, especially judges, are crooked, what can we expect of others? A second excerpt also comes from the Commercial Appeal, July the 19th, 1983. The article is entitled, Navy Officer Fired for Overspending. Please listen to this brief excerpt. Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger said yesterday that the Navy had fired an officer at a Florida Naval Center who has been charged with wasting tens of thousands of dollars in purchasing spare parts. Pentagon auditors charged the center with buying $80,000 worth of parts for an F-18 fighter bomber simulator from the Sperry Corporation of New York City that could have been purchased for $3,600 through the Navy's supply system. Page 1A. On July the 30th, 1983, the Commercial Appeal printed another article dealing with the same problem. This article accuses the Defense Department of spending $1,100 for a 1-inch square plastic cap that should have cost a quarter. The plastic caps were to be used for the legs of a chair used by B-52 navigators. In another case, the Navy paid Sperry Rand Corporation $110 for a diode, which was available from the Navy's own supply channels for 4 cents. Page A4. The same article reports that a seal for a jet engine increased in 1 year from $16 to $3,000, an increase of 12,500%. Representative Ed Jones from West Tennessee made these comments in a letter to his constituents. It is these kinds of reports that will eventually undermine public support for increased defense spending if they are not corrected. the Defense Department must be held accountable to the same standards being applied to other departments of government whose budgets are being cut back. Page A4. I want to make a few comments on what I have read to you. First, you and I are paying an excessive amount of taxes. Our tax monies are being wasted by many departments of government, local, state, and federal. Let us look for just a moment at one of the examples that I gave you. Some spare parts for the Navy, which should have cost $3,600, were bought by the Navy for $80,000. How many taxpayers here in Madison County or Chester County would it take to pay $80,000? If you pay $500 each year in federal taxes, it would take 150 people to make up for the money which was misused. Could you have used your part of that gross waste? How much of our tax money is abused and misused in much the same fashion? Second, the Commercial Appeal article castigates the Reagan administration for its failure to correct this inexcusable situation. I, too, believe that this administration should use every means at its disposal to bring about a speedy halt to this kind of stealing. I am sure that the President wants to see it corrected and is probably working diligently toward that end. It simply must not be allowed to continue. Those who are guilty, whether in the government, the military, or in industry, ought to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. They ought not to be allowed to plead extenuating circumstances either. However, every administration which I have known has been plagued with the same kinds of problems. Even during World War II, when every penny was so vital to the very survival of our nation, there were those in and out of government who were more concerned about their own welfare than their country's welfare. The federal, state, and local government must stop this great evil. Every penny must be used wisely, and an honest accounting must be made to the American people. We must remove from office those who allow these abuses to continue. I want to examine some scriptural principles which have a direct bearing on these problems. But before I do so, I want to examine one other example of corruption. This example refers to the sexual misconduct of two United States representatives, Jerry Studs, Democrat of Massachusetts, and Daniel Crane, Republican of Illinois. According to the Commercial Appeal, both of these men confessed to sexual misconduct with teenage pages. The House Ethics Committee reprimanded them for serious breach of duty. And this from the Commercial Appeal, July the 15th, 1983, page 1A. Representative Studs had been involved in a homosexual relationship with a 17-year-old boy. He acknowledged to the full House that he was a homosexual. You may have heard, or perhaps read, Studs' confession. He did not seem to be sorry that he had been involved, nor was there any apparent shame that he is a homosexual. He informed reporters that he intended to complete his term in the House of Representatives. Representative Daniel Crane of Illinois released the following statement. I'm sorry that I made a mistake. It happened 3 years ago. I'm human, and in no way did I violate my oath of office. I only hope my wife and children will forgive me. Of course, I am not in a position to be the ultimate judge of these men's behavior. But Representative Crane did appear, at least, to be remorseful. On July the 19th, 1983, the Commercial Appeal printed an article which was entitled, Lawmaker Blasts House Reprimand. Let me read this short article to you. Representative Newt Gingrich, Republican from Georgia, called on the House yesterday to kick out two members who had sex with teenage pages and complained it would be a sad joke merely to reprimand them as proposed by the Ethics Committee. This is not a question of sexual relations between consenting adults, said Gingrich. This is a question of the powerful exploiting the powerless, of an adult preying upon school children. Both men abuse power, he said of Representatives Daniel Crane and Jerry Stuns. In this setting, the Ethics Committee's proposals for reprimand are a sad joke. Gingrich's speech in the House was unusual for his harsh criticism of Stuns, whose statements he called arrogant and without remorse. Stuns did not contest the committee's accusation that he had a homosexual liaison with a 17-year-old page 10 years ago. He also was accused of making sexual advances to 2 teenage male pages a decade ago. Gingrich praised Crane for apologizing for having a sexual affair with a 17-year-old female page 3 years ago, but said he too should be expelled. A reprimand entails no loss of privileges or standing. Newsweek magazine, August 8, 1983, printed some letters regarding this sex scandal in Washington. One writer complained of the $1 million spent on what he called a pointless investigation to uncover these peccadilloes. Page 8. Another correspondent was of the opinion that Crane and Stuns were neither the first or the last of our Washington figures to engage in extramarital or homosexual affairs. He suggested that we should be more concerned about their voting records than about their private sexual activities. Third letter in this Newsweek magazine article expressed disappointment that Representatives Crane and Stuns received only a mild reprimand. Suppose, this writer asked, that Daniel Crane and Jerry Stuns were high school teachers instead of members of Congress. Would their actions have been merely reprimanded, or would sterner measures have been taken? Isn't personal judgment a reflection of one's ability to make responsible decisions? Or is this true for everyone except congressmen who take advantage of teenage pages? Page 8. As you can readily understand, this whole unpleasant situation has stirred the American people rather strongly. The reactions to this episode, as is so often true of similar episodes, has brought mixed reactions from the public. A rather substantial number of our citizens seems not to care whether their representatives are honest, moral, reliable, and decent, so long as they vote like their constituents desire. That a man will betray his wife and family, live a grossly immoral life, does not seem to concern some Americans. Does not one's sexual behavior give a clue to his general philosophy of life? Can a man be unfaithful to his wife, lie and cheat in a sexual liaison, and still be considered a worthy representative of his state or district? Others seem to be mildly disappointed in their representatives, but their major concern is the amount of money spent in trying to get the facts in the case. I join with those who are troubled at the enormous waste of the taxpayers' money. Furthermore, in most cases, the investigation could probably have been done with a few thousand dollars instead of the $1 million which this case cost. However, the case should have been pursued and the guilty prosecuted, or at least dismissed from the United States House of Representatives. Although I dislike to see our money wasted on any project, I wholeheartedly endorse exposing men like Crane and Stuns. This nation cannot afford the kind of cover-up which surrounded the Edward Kennedy case in Massachusetts. The American people have a right to know when their elected or their appointed government officials are misbehaving. When we attempt to hide such behavior, we become partakers of their evil deeds. I should like to make a few suggestions and observations on the cases we're discussing. First, in a representative democracy, such as we have in the United States, you and I have the opportunity and obligation to know the men and women who run for office and to use our votes to change conditions which we find objectionable. Your vote and mine must be used wisely. Of course, my vote alone may not radically alter our governmental policies, but when my vote and yours are combined with millions of other concerned citizens, we can make a difference. It is my sincere judgment that when you and I fail to vote, we have precious little ground for complaining when our wishes are not honored. Second, the Scriptures tell us that we are to make decisions on the basis of the greatest wisdom which we can muster. We should not make determinations solely on the basis of what will be best for my district or region, but what will serve all the people of our great country. So many times we are guilty of demanding that our elected representatives just look after West Tennessee or the South, but we are all in this together. We should strive with God's help to remove all prejudice, bigotry, and discrimination from our minds as we make decisions on moral and spiritual matters. Let me illustrate what I have in mind. Please do not interpret what I am about to say as being prejudiced from a political viewpoint, because I would make the same statements if the man elected or nominated had been a Republican. In 1983, the Democratic Party nominated Walter Mondale for the presidency of the United States. Millions of Americans vote for a man because he is a Democrat or a Republican, regardless of his moral or spiritual views. How can anyone who values his freedom, political, religious, or economic, vote for a man who has admitted that he is a humanist? Walter Mondale is a humanist. I want to show in the very near future what this materialistic philosophy really teaches, what the ethical values of humanism are. How could you vote for a man who denies the existence of God, who believes that ethics is autonomous and situational? Whether a humanist is a Democrat or a Republican, or a Dixiecrat or a Plutocrat, we do not need him or her representing us. Third, when you and I vote for public servants knowing that they are dishonest and immoral, we participate in their ungodliness and misconduct. Of course, I am aware that we cannot possibly know all there is to know about any man or woman. All of us have been deceived by the promises of politicians. When we send a man or a woman to Nashville or to Washington, we cannot know for sure that we shall be properly and honestly represented. It is unfortunate that such is the case, but we all know that it is. However, we should use every means at our disposal to learn what a man believes, what he has accomplished or not accomplished with his life, whether or not he is honest, decent, and fair. Although there are cases where a man changes radically after he goes to Washington, in most cases, a man will be in Washington what he has been all along. If he changes when he becomes our representative, we need to let him know that we are watching, and that unless he changes for the better, we shall have to turn him out to pasture. We simply cannot say, "Oh, that's the way Washington is." We absolutely must hold our representatives responsible for their behavior. Whether they engage in bribe-taking or taking advantage of their teenage pages, they have to be held accountable. Since the Senate and the House seldom remove their members for misbehavior, let us help those bodies by removing those who are unfaithful to their responsibilities. Fourth, when we think of voting for a certain man or woman for public office, we need to ask ourselves, what influence will this man or woman have on the young people of our nation? A president or a senator or a congressman is in the public eye. Our young people hear on radio or see on television or read in the newspapers and magazines what our elected representatives are doing and saying. When they know that public servants are deceiving the public, cheating on taxes, seducing their 17-year-old pages, taking bribes, and compromising their country, what respect can our young people have for them? It is inexcusable that we allow such men and women to remain in public office. The Newsweek article, which I mentioned a few minutes ago, asked, Suppose that Daniel Crane and Jerry Studs were high school teachers instead of members of Congress. Would their actions have been merely reprimanded, or would sterner measures have been taken? Are we allowing our elected representatives to follow one code of ethics and our school teachers to live by another? What sense does it make to fire a school teacher for heterosexual or homosexual immorality and keep an elected official in Congress when he has committed the same or worse? Suppose the preacher of your congregation were to be guilty of seducing a 17-year-old guy or girl. Would you be in favor of merely slapping him on the wrist? Most churches would fire such a lecturer immediately. But we keep men like Studs and Crane in the United States House of Representatives. The influence of these two men has to be far more detrimental than the influence of a local school teacher or a preacher. Now, as we bring our lesson to a close, let us review some biblical principles which deal with this kind of dishonesty, irresponsibility, and gross immorality which we have been discussing. First, Paul admonished, "Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men." Romans 12:17. The New International Version translates that verse, "Do not repay evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody." Is there anybody in my audience who thinks that Representative Studs and Crane did that which was right in the eyes of everybody? Can a man deliberately misuse taxpayers' funds and honestly believe that he is providing things honestly in the sight of all men? In the chapter from which I am reading, Romans 12, Paul also stated, "Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good." Romans 12:9. Do the men who cheat and lie and steal know that their behavior is evil? My friend, you know they do. Then they are not to be excused for that behavior. Very few of our public servants can plead ignorance. They just simply are not willing to govern their lives by the rules which keep civilization operating. If everybody followed the same approach, how could our nation survive? I hope you understand that I am not expecting our senators and representatives to be sinlessly perfect. Obviously, there are no such creatures, not preachers or teachers or policemen or anyone else. However, the kind of behavior that we have been discussing this morning cannot be overlooked on the basis that no one is perfect. Representative Crane knew that seducing an underage girl was not only immoral, but also illegal. Studs was no less knowledgeable about his conduct. While we must seek to understand what our fellow men do, we must not condone such activity. As we close our lesson this morning, let me tell you of another case of misconduct with which I am familiar. A Republican congressman from North Carolina was married to a woman in that state. This man and his legal wife could not have children. He was a timber man and had to travel to the state of Virginia. In Virginia, he had another wife and two children. When his bigamy was discovered and reported in the press, he was embarrassed and forced to resign from the United States House of Representatives. My friends, I have not told you this story to point out the shortcomings of this public servant, nor to emphasize his leaving the House of Representatives. I wanted to report the reactions of some prominent business and professional people with whom I am acquainted. I was attending a business meeting in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the time that this man's immorality was announced. There must have been 40 or 50 of us in a room in Charlotte. I was amazed at the attitudes of the people in that room. They said, in effect, a man has a right to posterity. If his legal wife could not bear children, he had a right to find someone who could. When I pointed out that it was immoral, whatever the motivation, they reminded me of our Lord's attitude toward the woman taken in adultery. Jesus asked, Woman, where are thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? She said, No man, Lord. And Jesus said unto her, Neither do I condemn thee. John 8:10-11. But that, my friends, is not all that Jesus said to the woman. He also said, Go and sin no more. John 8:11. Did Jesus consider this woman's behavior sinful? Does he consider the acts of studs and cranes sinful? I encourage you to read your Bible and to answer honestly for yourself. We thank you for listening to our discussion today. If you have questions or comments, you are urged to write or to call. Thank you for listening, and may God bless you.